What's up, guys? This is the Toasty Podcast. I got to be honest. I'm just trying to figure out what kind of topics we want to cover. So today we're going to talk about some car restorations.
Finally.
That's our... yeah. So that's our thing, if you guys didn't know. You guys might learn a little bit about us. I don't know. We'll see.
This is going to be a slightly more personal podcast because it is our personal restoration projects that we're going to be talking about. And I mean, we're both in the car business. And, I mean, it's like cars and politics. Those are my two big things. So,
well, there you go. There you have it. See, my two things are cars and content creation. So, I don't know. We'll see. But we'll get things started here in just a second. First, I want to give a shout-out to my guys at Blueberry. They are what make this podcast possible. They host my podcast. All right, Toasters, it's that time again. I don't often get the chance to tell you how I got started, and honestly, I don't want to bore you with the entire story. Actually, if you want that, you can check out my website at skyfi.co. One of the main things that made it super easy to get into podcasting for me, though, is Blueberry. Blueberry is absolutely one of the best podcast hosting services around, and it's priced cheaper than most of them, even Podbean. The fact is, a host is normally just a host. But Blueberry is more than that because they created a stellar WordPress plugin that makes it as simple as writing a blog post to upload and distribute your latest and greatest episodes. How awesome is that? I don't want to ruin the recipe, so I won't go too far into the details, but I think you get it. If you've ever wanted to get yourself out there and start podcasting or creating new exciting content, now's the time. The hardest part is actually starting, and trust me, I get that. Hit me up with any questions you might have on podcasting at my email listed in the show notes. Peace, love, and podcasting. Now, back to the show. Anyway, so yeah, car restorations. Well, where do we want to start with that? I mean, essentially, what is a car restoration, you'd think? And it's not just building from a car you bought. Like, you can't go out and buy a car at a quote-unquote store, a dealer, and start restoring it. That's not how it really works, unless it is actually a piece of trash that you're buying.
In which case, it may not be worth restoring, you know?
Right. And I don't know. I guess maybe some people argue about that. I'm not sure. But restorations, in my opinion, is like from the ground up. You know, like the car, everything you're going to touch at the end of the project, you would have touched every piece of equipment on that car. Right? And whether you're good at fabricating or not, at some point in the build, you usually end up having to make something.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's crazy to me, you know. But you can end up building stuff on a car that's, like, supposed to be well-made and, like, made for the public, and it's not. I mean, well, it may be, but it's some things aren't right, you know.
Yeah.
So what is your project?
So should I go? It's a backstory. It's a sentimental project. To add some context, my granddad basically bought this piece of property in Texas for his dad, my great-grandfather, and to retire on, essentially. It's an 80-acre pecan farm, and my granddad called my great-granddad and said, hey, I just bought this pecan farm in Texas. He lived in Wyoming at the time, and he said, you want to come down here and live on it for free, and I'll buy you everything you could possibly need for it. Okay, sure, why not? So he moved from his place in Wyoming. He actually was my great granddad owned several bakeries and worked as the head chef on a dude ranch. So,
okay, what is a dude ranch?
A dude ranch is basically a ranch where people come in, they work for 6 months and leave. You know what I mean? It's like people come and go all the time. There's constant work, so you know, it's kind of a
Where did that name come from?
I don't
know. Okay, that's just weird to me. Yeah. All right, keep going.
So, yeah, dude ranching. It's a real thing. Anyway, so the truck came from that. My granddad bought the truck, a barn, several trailers for to live in, like our residential trailers, lots of other equipment, tractor, four-wheeler, lawnmower, all that stuff, just fully loaded everything you could want for a farm, and gave it to his dad. My great-granddad lived there for, gosh, 30 years, and then that's just where he spent his time. He lived until he was about 96, 94, so old-timer. But so that's where that truck came from. It's a 1975 Chevy K20, and the difference between, like, the C10, C20, K10, K20 is the C and the K is two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive. So the C is two-wheel drive, the K is four-wheel drive. The 20, 10, 20, and 30, that's the tonnage. So there's like a quarter ton, half ton, and one ton. I have the half ton, so.
Wowzers.
That's it.
Okay, okay. You know, where's the appeal in a truck like that? Is it because it's sentimental value strictly, or is
for it? For me, yeah. I wouldn't be able to sell this truck for what I'm going to put into it. There's no way. But unless I did some crazy customization fabrication, but I'd have to have my own shop and tools and a lot more.
Well, yes, exactly, right? It's like at some point you're going to be doing freaking fabrication.
Yeah. But for this specific project, it is more sentimental. I just want to keep this truck. After my dad inherited the place, my granddad was too busy, didn't want it. So he gave it to my dad and me and my brother. So all three of us are co-owners of this farm right now. And, my dad was like, you can have the truck. I'm not going to use it for anything. And it sat for 20 years because my great grandfather died in 98. Or so, somewhere in that era, and so I was about 7 years old. Obviously, couldn't take care of a truck, and it sat there until just a couple, maybe it sat outside for about 15 years, which is not good for cars, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then it sat in a barn. I moved it into the barn because I was like, I'm gonna keep this. I want to restore it.
This is the barn car.
Yes. And so I moved it into a barn, and it sat there for about 5 years, and then. Earlier in 2019, I began the restoration and moved it and just started. Oh man, the stuff I found that had lived in that truck, that had been stolen from the truck because it had been outside and abandoned, basically an abandoned farm. Just all sorts of stuff.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Pecan shells, rats.
Yeah.
Lots of.
Oh, I can imagine. It's crazy.
You know, rat evidence everywhere.
Right.
But it's totally cleaned out. The truck is totally clean. And I've begun dismantling stuff. I'm about to pull the engine and start rebuilding that 350.
So that's another good question. How do you approach a restoration? Is this the first restoration you've ever done?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, first of all, would you approach it differently?
Knowing what I know now, probably. I wasn't planning on pulling the engine. I really wanted to do what's called like more of a rolling restoration where you get it running and then you just kind of gradually build it and you can drive it most of the time you're working on it.
That's like the dream.
Yeah, that is the dream. So when I first checked the engine to see if it was locked up, I could rotate the crank and it was not locked up, which is good. I started tearing down, I tore it all the way down to basically the heads. And I was about to pull the heads. I was like, you know, let's check. I want to make sure it's in TDC, which is top dead center. That's a car thing. I'm not going to get too far into that because we could go all day on TDC. But
oh my goodness!
So I start trying to turn the crank, and I freaking shear the bolt, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's not good. So
I don't know if we'll add bleepers, but it's whatever. Yeah. I mean, we all worked in a shop, so I'm sorry if
yeah,
we
if, any, if car talk
language, whatever.
Yeah, when it comes to car talk.
So you sheared the bolt for the e-brake? Is that what we're talking about?
No, I was trying to.
Sorry,
turn the crank to get it in TDC.
Oh, right, and that bolt,
the crank bolt sheared.
How do you?
I don't know.
That,
but it's turning and none of the rockers were moving or anything, so I was just like, well,
that just sounds like a really old engine. Holy crap. So yeah. Now you're thinking about rebuilding or getting a new engine.
Turned before I started taking stuff apart, so I'm like, it's been in neutral.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea.
That's weird.
It needs to be rebuilt anyway. I've already rebuilt the car. I rebuilt the distributor. I'm about to just keep tearing it down and just go. Put it on engine hoist and then tear down everything, power wash it, ship it to a shop, get it machined, bring it back, and then put all new.
Okay, so that's like the engine aspect. But what about like the interior? You stripped everything out?
So,
or are you doing that?
The cool thing about the interior of that truck is that it's literally a bench seat and then just metal. There was no carpet. There was some really raggedy old rubber floor mats that I just tossed. They disintegrated and I just tossed them. Since it did sit outside, there's lots of rust issues. The frame is fine, but the floorboards of the cab have holes in them.
The cool thing about having a truck like that, though, is it's on a truck frame, right?
Oh, yeah.
So all you got to do is, like, you can literally just build an aluminum panel and weld it in if you really want sheet steel or whatever.
Yeah, so they actually have stamped sheet metal that's for that exact year and the truck for both sides. And it's like, it's cheap. It's like, I want to say it's under $100 per plate.
Really?
And you can tack weld it in and then weld it all in. So, right. You just cut out what you need and then, or cut out the rusted areas and then patch it. They make everything for that truck. Every little nut and bolt. I literally found door panel screws.
Why? Okay, that's so weird to me. Like, BMW, I'm getting on that subject because I have a BMW restoring. They brag about having so many parts for their cars. Like, when the 2002 was 30 years old, they're like, we have everything. But I am not finding a lot of things for this E30, which now it's a 325 and it's an 87 model. So now it's like 31 years old, right? But like, I am not finding like door panel screws. If that was it's not really a thing on those cars, but if it was, wouldn't find it, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Any of the rubber, you're not finding it.
The weather stripping and stuff?
No, nothing rubber you're going to find.
Gosh.
So I'm screwed there. I don't know.
See, that's the beauty about it restoring an American car is I've got my 92 Camaro, which is more of a rolling restoration. It runs and drives fine.
You have two restoration kind of things going on.
Yeah, that's why I'm broke.
Heck yeah.
Actually, they're both pretty much paused right now because I'm getting married and going to Europe and trying to buy a house. So it's like,
I would hold off on that stuff. They're paused. Car life is a broke life. So
yeah. At least we don't race. Good grief. If we
racing takes a lot of money.
Oh,
takes a lot of money.
Like,
and we're not talking about street racing. We're talking about legitimate racing on like a track. So
autocross.
We wouldn't do that. We're not heathens. So, but yeah, it's expensive. So the restoration build for me is just an 87 325, and I bought it, and it was a piece of crap. And I thought I was going to do the same thing as you, rolling restoration. It doesn't work. It doesn't happen. It's a dream that doesn't usually come true. I did a lot of things wrong, so I'm kind of just paying for that now. But one of the first things I did was paint it, which I'm not sure why. Don't ask me why. And it wasn't just like paint, like spray. It was like I got a guy to paint the car, and even though I hadn't really done anything to it, took the engine out of it, had him paint it. That would have been fine had I, like, I just wish I would have gone more ham. Stripped everything and like bare metal. Like, I wish I would have done that. He did bare metal on the outside. That's fine. He went all the way to bare metal. Great. Good for him. But I didn't have anything stripped on the inside. Seats were still in it. The trunk was still kind of there. If I would have just took it to him, like, doors off, like, trunk's gone.
Just a shell.
Just paint everything, but it's like all just a shell. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the dream, right? Now that I'm seeing all these cars that are getting that done, I'm like, it's just such a better work. It's just better work.
Yeah.
Because it's for one, you're almost eliminating the painter doesn't have to be that good at that point because he doesn't have to worry about overspray. And if you don't have to worry about overspray,
you just go.
Then you don't have to worry about it. Yeah. You don't have to tape off anything. You're not worried about. Yeah. It's just. So that's the first biggest mistake I've made on this restoration, I think. But I guess there's always next time. You know, I don't want to take the engine back out that I've already built with the turbo on it and everything and then repaint the engine bay just yet. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'll just call it a loss and run the car how it's going to be and then get another car.
It kind of depends on What you want to get for
it. What do you want to get? Well, yeah, what you... Yeah, I guess so. You're right. Like,
you just got to look at what you have in it. If I can sell it for this much, maybe I can make $1,000.
Resale value. Kind
of break even, roughly, and then move on to a next project.
I mean...
That's one way to look at it, or you could just spend more time on it. But you probably have to get it repainted if you're going to do all that. Or at least touched up.
I mean, that's the thing is, yeah, that was a one-off paint. I made it myself.
Oh, wow.
I didn't make it myself, sorry. I mean, I got the paint code from BMW, so it was a BMW paint code.
Oh, wow.
Told them to add metallic flake, more metallic to it, and then I added purple flake, micro flake, not regular flake. So I did all that in the paint at the paint shop, English Brothers, actually. It's in Irving. I don't know if any of you guys are in DFW. Irving. Euless? I don't know. It's like right above us. It's in HEB. Yeah. It's in HEB area, I think. Anyway, they're great. The guy helped me out a lot. He made the paint like perfect. And they hand make all their paints. Hand making for them doesn't really mean by hand. It just means they select all the different coating options and then it turns the paint for them, of course. But pretty cool little place, actually. Very, very detailed in their paint. And then I got European clear, you know, I think it's like Euro Clear 2000. I don't know. Paint names are dumb. Like, they're literally like, you know, I don't know, super awesome califragilistic expialidocious times two. You know, that's what the name would be. Or
another dumb
Russell
one.
3000 or some crap.
And what's with like Chevy Orange? It's like, or Chevy Red. I think they call it Chevy Red and it's like orange.
Yeah, what is that? Yeah, there's tons of paint colors that are not accurate at all, but it is what it is, I guess. But yeah, that's the first mistake I made for sure, and that's probably the biggest one that I'm going to be paying for a while. Other than that, the rest of it, I think, I mean, yeah, it definitely just takes time. Mine's running now, so that's great, but...
it sounds good.
Yeah, I need to get an actual exhaust built, you know? So, there's that. Bosho. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got just loads of stuff to do on the truck.
The other thing is space. Like, what do you do for space for your restoration builds?
Well, not to brag, but I have a giant barn to work in.
But where's that at?
It's in Comanche. It's 2 hours away, so that sucks, but I've got a lot of tools out there. I can take whatever tools I really need, like special tools.
So, really, you drive 2 hours to work on your stuff?
Oh, yeah. Really? I drive to my farm almost every weekend.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do a lot of driving.
What do you do out there, though? Like, at the farm, well, besides work on your stuff?
So, we'll manage...
It's a pecan farm?
Mm-hmm. We'll manage the trees. So, the trees actually look really, really good. And then we'll shred the fields to make sure that the grass doesn't get too high. We have longhorns out there to keep our ag exemption in case we don't have enough pecans to sell.
America!
Yeah.
Or Texas or whatever, but...
Pictures.
Hey, what, by the way,
yes,
what's it take to get an ag exemption?
Depends on the size of the property.
So if it's 2.5 acres,
does not take much.
If it's 2.5 acres,
get some chickens or a beehive, you're done.
For real, chickens count?
Chickens or a beehive or
goats?
Goats.
Two and a half acres
is probably enough for 4 or 5 goats.
And no then problem. You can get an ag exemption?
Oh yeah.
2 years, I guess, how long it takes? This is all of stuff. What do you do?
Not even. You have an inspector come out and boom, you're exempt. Same.
What?
Same like month.
Dude, this is news to me. So I've gotten 3 different answers. You're the third answer.
It's
the good answer. The,
it's no, easy.
The one that knows it probably because he actually deals with it.
Yeah.
My one buddy said, no, it's not worth it unless you have 10 acres, which I don't know what the heck that means.
I mean, it may not be worth it because your property taxes aren't going to be that high off 2.5 acres. I mean, we have 80 acres, which is the property taxes are like $6,000 a year. Without the ag exemption, with the ag exemption, they're about $1,000 a year.
See, that's insane.
Yeah.
So if 80%
reduced.
If it's 80%, but it's not 80% if you don't have that much property tax. Is that how it works? Is it progressive?
I don't know, actually.
Because, like, I have 2.5 acres, right? So it's like 2.5 acres, and it costs, I think it's like between $2,000 and $3,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, and, that's pricey. Well, because it's Lindale, I guess.
Okay.
It's freaking stupid. And the land is expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
The land's probably worth $40,000 by itself, which isn't much to me. I want to do stuff to it, but whatever. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if it would take anything. If it takes something off of that, I mean, you know?
So if you're not living on the land, I wouldn't recommend goats because Goats are escape artists.
High maintenance, right?
They're really high maintenance.
Oh, escape artists. Interesting. Yeah.
They're like snakes. They just find ways to get out. It's crazy. They're super good at climbing. They're way quicker than you would think. They're not smart, but they never stop moving. Like, cows will just sit there and chew their cud like idiots because they are. They're really dumb animals. They'll just sit there and just... all day long. Yeah. No problem. They don't care.
Okay.
Goats are like, what's over here? What's over here? They don't stop.
Okay.
You know? They're cool. Restless.
We'll come back to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
For sure.
That could be another episode.
Dude, that is awesome, man. Ag exemption, man. That is gold. Anyway, so you're doing this stuff. You're keeping up with the longhorns. You're cutting grass.
Trimming trees.
Who else is out
stuff?
There?
Me, my brother, and my dad.
So all three of you guys own the farm, right?
Yeah, and one of us is out there once a week, easy.
So yeah.
Any given weekend, one of us is going to be out there. We do hunting out there. We go duck hunting out there because we have water on the property, lots of water. So the duck hunting is actually really good out there when the water tanks are full.
Holy crap.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds freaking sweet, man.
Deer hunting, duck hunting.
I've never been duck hunting. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how I would like it.
I was like, you know, duck hunting, ooh, cool, whatever. And then I went, and it was just me. It was me and Sierra, but she obviously just sat and watched.
Right.
The hardest part is waking up at the... You have to wake up 30 minutes before sunrise.
Well, that's like hunting, man. Like
hunting,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Waking up at 4 a.m. to go deer hunting. You're like, oh, my God.
And we just have like a little RV trailer out there, but it's enough. It's got heat and AC and a mini fridge, so...
That sounds better than most.
It's plenty, yeah. It's all you would need.
Yeah.
And, there's one out there, and... I was just like, I just want to get one or two just to get my feet wet, no pun intended, and see where things go. And first shot, my very first shot, boom, duck. I was like, yes. I had like a little duck call and everything. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. I just camo head to toe. That's all I knew because I have really good vision.
Waders?
No waders or anything. I didn't sit in the water.
Oh, you didn't get in the water?
I sat on the edge of the bank.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we've got kayaks down there, so we... I don't have any dogs to go get
right.
the bird.
That's
bird
the main
dogs.
Thing, right? Get a lab to get the dog. Yeah.
That's good and everything, but I don't know. Doing all that training is doing all that training is like it's a whole.
Sorry,
other
we
thing.
Just had a weird little. I was testing out some sound equipment over here, so I had a reverb.
My brother's brother-in-law has a bird dog that he spent like $6,000 or something crazy to get trained.
I mean, if it's done right, it costs a lot, right?
But this dog was still, like, not super obedient.
Are you serious?
So I was like, what the
hell? I would be pissed.
If I spent that much money, I'd be like, this dog better go get my beer from the fridge.
Seriously, the beer's duck. Okay. And it should know English by that point.
Yeah, right? She'd be, like, doing my math problems before
Holy
doing my
crap, dude. Is there a refund for that? $6,000?
Kayak was free, so whatever. Just go out there on the kayak, pick up the duck, and come back. And we, whenever I go out hunting with my brother, we'll go out there and we'll limit out easy. It's 9 ducks a piece, no problem. And then we'll eat 2 or 3 for breakfast right after we're done hunting, and then we'll take the rest home and freeze them.
Sounds like a lit time out there on the, you know,
it's
pecan farm.
Oh, it's fun. And it's outside city limits, so you can do whatever you want.
The Bricker pecan farm. Yeah, I mean, I lived out, like, whenever I grew up, I lived outside of city limits, so I know what that's like. I was like telling some friends the other day, like, fireworks were normal. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you'd have a weekend where you're like, what are we going to do? I don't know. Let's just freaking hang
blow
out
stuff up.
And blow stuff up and then use fireworks for whatever reason and then probably end up shooting them at each other and being stupid, you know, but... that was it. So I get that. Living out of city limits definitely has its perks.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, being outside of city limits has its perks. Living outside of city limits is a little tough.
So you think so?
Especially for younger people.
So what would you say about that? What's the differences here? You think that it's because you don't have as much interaction or something? Or
that and there's just like, there's no Walmart in Comanche. There's no, I mean, there's like literally 4 fast food places.
Okay, so I cannot.
There's just no diversity. The population of that town is 4,500 people.
Oh,
it's a tiny town.
So I'm not about to say that I lived in that small of a town.
Yes,
I can't claim that.
Different, yeah.
Because I had a Walmart whenever I was like a kid. I remember the population being $6,000. But when I was in high school, it was $12,000.
Oh, dang.
And then whenever I was, like, actually graduated and, like, in living in Tyler, which is a town, like, 30 or 45 minutes away, mm-hmm. it was, like, probably 16 grand. So it was going, the population was rising like crazy
right.
in that town. So I can't speak for that. I definitely lived outside of city limits still, but it was, like...
I looked at, like, Census Bureau information for Comanche, and in 1990, the population was, like, 4,400, and then, like, in 2020, it's, like, 4,800. It's like,
holy crap,
not grown at all.
Oh my gosh,
the same place.
How do you, I mean, what?
But they don't want to grow, and there's nothing like, there's Brownwood to the southeast or southwest, and then there's Stephenville to the northeast. And those
is
are,
that close to Gorman at all? Do you know where Gorman is?
Gorman,
it's close to Stephenville apparently.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. Comanche's, maybe it's over there.
Comanche's only about 35 miles from Stephenville. So.
Really? Mm-hmm. 35 miles?
Yeah, down 377.
One of my good friends grew up in Gorman, which was like a freaking 4,800 town as well. Yeah, no Walmart or anything.
I don't think I've heard of Gorman.
Had to go to Stephenville to do anything.
There's like 1,000 towns in Texas.
And yeah, isn't that crazy? I'm still hearing some from customers that are new, and I'm like, what is King's Cup? You know, that's not actually a town. I just obviously joke. But, yeah, you're just like, why do they name a town that, you know?
So many weird towns.
Just
names.
Weird, you know? Yeah, and then speaking of towns, like, what's the difference in states and towns? Like, I know Pennsylvania calls them something different.
Well, it's like, it kind of depends on who established the state, right? Like, Texas is a Spanish, has Spanish heritage from Spain, you know? Spain owned Texas, then it was Mexican, now it's... Then it was Texas, its own independent nation, and now it's part of the U.S. Louisiana has parishes instead of counties.
Right, because it's like, is it French or something? I don't know.
French, yeah.
French?
Yeah.
What you call it?
I don't know.
It's like weird.
Louisiana is probably the most unique state, in my opinion. Because
you think so?
Because no other state has that much French influence. Like Missouri has a lot of French influence because it's right next to... Louisiana.
You mean
it's
you're close. Not from Missouri? Yeah, I Missouri? Mean, I agree. You're right about that. It definitely is the weird one out of all of America. Mm-hmm. Or not really weird, honestly. It's
and
not weird. Pennsylvania it's kind of cool.
Pennsylvania is unique, too, because of its Quaker heritage. And
yeah.
And then Utah.
That's why I mentioned Pennsylvania to begin with. It was a different state.
Mm-hmm. And then Utah as well, because of all the Mormons.
Oh.
It was about 60% of Utah's population.
Like LDS, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why I brought that up, because, like, Louisiana, I've never really known what the heck's going on there, like, as far as, like, why is it so different? But the heritage in Louisiana, it seems to stick.
It's French and Spanish heritage.
And it, like, that's what I'm saying, but it's still, like, mm-hmm. really present.
Exactly.
Really present.
Yeah.
If you go to Pennsylvania, the only thing you might think is, like, Quaker because of how rural it is,
mm-hmm.
and you might see an Amish person.
Yeah.
But, like, cool. It's not as, I don't know if it's as prevalent as Louisiana still. And then Utah, well, there's nothing even out there. So when you go out there, all you see is freaking desert and salt flats. So you have no idea what it is.
Mountains and stuff, yeah. They all live in, like, 80% of the population's in Salt Lake City, something like that. And then, like, 80% of Salt Lake City population are LDS, Church of Latter-day Saints.
Holy Mormons. Crap.
Yeah, they're huge out there. And then, like, more rural Utah is more just normal. To say that Mormons aren't normal, but I'm saying, like, non-Mormon peoples. Sorry, Mormons.
But we do understand.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Y'all are great.
We get it, man. Well, cool, man. We talked about a little bit of restoration stuff. I mean, are there any, like, pointers we could give to someone that's going to start a restoration now?
The more time you spend looking at things and planning things before you just start wrenching on stuff, the better, right? You got to organize, come up with a plan of action, come up with a budget, prioritize, make a list, take a lot of pictures. Take a lot of pictures. I have 300 pictures of my... I'm like a third of the way tearing it down, and I have 300 pictures. There's probably going to be 1,000 pictures of the teardown alone.
So that's a really good point. And I didn't do that. That is a super good point. Oh, my gosh.
Different angles and stuff.
Yeah, you can't.
And
you
label.
Cannot, oh, my gosh.
Label all your parts, even if you're not going to reuse it. So that way you know what you need, you know what you have, you know what thread the bolt is. Like, oh, I just got this bolt and it's a different thread pitch or whatever. You know, it's like, well, that's not the right bolt. Make sure you can compare your old part to your new part.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it. Because there's a lot of bolts, dude, that I put on that probably weren't the right bolt. They just fit, you know?
Yeah.
And they actually fit.
The cool thing about...
they weren't the right bolt.
That's European cars. It's like there's 10 different bolts for the same part. Yeah. The cool thing about American cars is like, oh man, it's like the same bolt for everything.
Yeah.
It's all just the same bolt. The cool thing about General Motors specifically, they do a lot of their building in Canada. So a lot of their... bolt sizes are metric, which is weird, right? You wouldn't think they'd be metric, but
yeah, but a lot of them is are. It like so a lot of them are so not, all of them.
Not all of them, yeah,
that sucks.
Like
honestly.
Spark plugs are all like what,
well, okay,
5/8 or something like that,
but I mean like it is nice to not have not just have metric, because metric's honestly easier, but
mm-hmm.
if you have both, that just makes it even worse.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what America's been doing for a while on their domestics.
Yeah, my 2013 GMC has both.
Right.
Like lots of different both. It's like, come on, guys.
Come on, man. Yeah, dude. That's what I love about BMW. It's all metric. Everything on there. There's no change. That's great, dude. That's awesome.
Oh, one thing I was going to say about parts is if you ever want to restore Mercedes-Benz still makes every single part for every single car they've ever made. And if people are like, wow, really? That's really cool. And then they think about it and they go, wow, that must be really expensive.
That's super expensive.
And it is.
You know what,
those
though?
Those parts are not cheap, but they're right. They're perfect.
So, yeah. So, that's the thing is, like, my rubber's all gone and I can't get any more now. Even if it was expensive, it wouldn't matter. It's just not existent.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Mercedes has a lot of commercial agreements.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why they're able to keep it up.
They're
because they have, like, they do, like, freaking... military stuff. They do like tons of random like trucks,
mm-hmm.
freaking 18 wheelers, like everything. And so I guess maybe it makes sense that they're able to keep that kind of stuff up. Because BMW, I don't know of them doing any, like
BMW's
all I know is that they're
fairly,
a taxi.
Yeah, like, they're a fairly small auto group compared to like Mercedes or Volkswagen or Toyota. You know, I think Toyota's one or two. They're right up there with Volkswagen Group as the number one.
Dude, Toyota, that's a company right there.
Yeah.
No,
I'm just okay. I have nothing against Asian vehicles, but they're just
not the car themselves. The company.
The company.
It's amazing, dude. The way they have this whole process for training somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like it's not called the gauntlet, but it's pretty much a gauntlet. So you go through everything. Even if you're just gonna be a factory worker, you go through everything and you learn all the whole process.
Whoa.
And so they run it, dude. It's like a freaking machine, and they're not union. Imagine that, you know, because our GM, freaking Ford, you know, and Dodge, they're all unionized,
they're all up
right?
In, yeah,
so
they're all up
know,
in Michigan.
Man, I mean,
union states.
I normally it just seems to cause issues. I don't know. I mean, that's just what it seems like from the outside looking in. Toyota doesn't do that. They have a whole documentary on this crap. And what's funny is my brother, who's not a car guy at all, is the one that brought this to my attention. He's like, dude, Toyota's so cool. Look at how they run their stuff. And I was like, what? And I looked it up, and it's like almost like a martial art, the way they train, you know? Because maybe it's because it's Japanese.
I was going to say,
whatever. Dude. Maybe that's why.
I was thinking, right when you said martial arts, I was like, you know, Mazdas are really similar to that.
Cause
it's not like an indoctrination, but I sold Mazdas way back in the day.
Yeah.
The training there, maybe I was like, Mazda's cool, I guess. But then after I completed like a lot of training and like learned more about the company, there's no subsidiaries to Mazda and nobody owns Mazda. Mazda is just Mazda. That's
right.
It. Like BMW Auto Group is Rolls-Royce, BMW, and Mini Cooper.
Yeah. Lucky for us, BMW's on the top, but still. Yeah,
exactly. But like Mazda's just Mazda.
Right.
And they are so true to themselves and so traditional, and they really think about their cars a lot.
It's weird though, because like they really think about the cars, but have you seen what pops out of Mazda? Like,
yeah,
you know.
But the Mazda 6 is a really, really good car.
Really?
Any of them? Yeah, yeah.
Look what how many, the heck? I haven't really heard someone say that. An advocate for Mazda. Here we are.
Yeah, they're.
Have you seen the headlights on the 6? I mean, they're kind of weird. All right, whatever.
I'm sure they are.
The older ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. They're kind of weird.
At least it was different, I guess. Yeah. I mean, Toyota, like, I think Toyota is just, they are the efficient car. Like, mm-hmm. they're like the face of efficient car, and then maybe Honda on the side mm-hmm. of that. Mazda, you know, that's interesting you say this stuff, because Mazda hasn't really ever had a thing for me. Like, they don't, when I don't really think of much when I think of Mazda. There's mm-hmm. not really a, where's the signifier? They don't make sports cars, really.
Oh, man.
But they have.
But I'll say, back the in only the day, thing dude, the that RX-7, I can think of, the RX-8, the Mazda Speed 3.
Right. The only thing I can think of is obviously the Miata, right?
And the Miata,
because
yeah.
literally,
legend.
Everyone and their mom has thought about owning one. You may not have owned one.
Yeah.
You've definitely thought about it. And don't yes. tell me you haven't, because I've been there too.
Yeah.
You know?
I think we all have.
When you're
yeah.
when you're in your lowest of lows and you're like, man, I just want a car to drive and I want it to be fun, and Miata pops in your head.
Yes. When back when I you sold know? Mazdas, I you know, the MX-5 had just come out. The newer one, I think it was like 2016 MX-5, had just come out. It was a new redesign, and it's bad looking. It's a bad little car. And man, that car was like a go-kart. It handles so well. It's right. so fun to drive. It top speed is like 110 miles an hour or something yep. like that. But it's just phenomenal, you know, and they're reliable. But
yeah, I had a friend growing up that cars. Raced spec Miata. She was like, she was cool. She was a cool chick. But she had like, I tried to drive it once. And she was like 6 foot. Dude, that didn't work. You couldn't adjust the seat or anything. So it was a race car, whatever. That's a yeah. long story, but. That's like a really big thing, you know, spec Miata, getting into racing with a Miata, it's cheap. Mm-hmm. And, apparently Mazda like backs up their stuff. So even if you track a new one, it's still under warranty.
Oh,
like
wow.
they know it's been tracked. I messed up the transmission cause I autocrossed it. Cool, man. Here's a new transmission.
What about, does BMW do that for the M cars?
No,
wow.
no. If you wear out your transmission and it messes up, cause it's on a racetrack. I guarantee you, if someone said something, it would not be covered. But knowing the way the shop works, and you have guys that mm-hmm. are actually car enthusiasts, if you get the one guy like Steve, you know, that just doesn't care really about cars, and he's really by the rule book, he mm-hmm. would probably say, this car's been tracked, there's no way. And then he would say it's not covered,
it for
right?
everybody.
He'd ruin it for everybody, right? And Mazda, like I said, yeah, they apparently just fully back their stuff.
Wow.
I don't know this for a fact. I've heard it happens. So basically, I haven't owned a Mazda and done this.
It doesn't surprise me.
Tons of people have talked about this thing they do. You know,
mm-hmm.
they basically are advocates for you using your Mazda. Yeah, man. Well, this has been real. It's been fun, real fun. A little bit of car restoration idea stuff. We didn't go super detailed into it, but we did talk about it. I think.
We'll on our website. We'll probably do an article about it. We'll put some pictures up of our projects and
yeah.
keep you posted as to the progress.
The deal is that, like I said, we're looking for something to talk about, and I would love to have any experts on or any guests on, of course, but you know, podcasts usually need a niche, and I would love to think that I can talk about anything on this show and people mm-hmm. might listen, but that's just not the way the world works. I'm really not that well known. We're not Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And so we can't do that. So anyway, if you guys have any pointers or any topics you want to discuss, let me know. But until then, we're just going to keep rolling with randos, yeah. I guess.
Or if you're an expert in your field and you're like, you know, really well known, if you're really like a celebrity, like if, you know, you want to come on? Come on. I'm going to have you on.
That means you, Ryan Gosling.
Oh, God.
Just kidding.
I wouldn't be able to focus if you came on.
Bro, I was about to say, dude, man, crush, dude. Oh, man. All right. Anyway, peace.